Welcome and thank you for joining us on Birth Mother Matters and Adoption with Kelly Rourke Scarry and me, Ron Raines, where we delve into the issues of adoption from every angle of the adoption triad.
Do what's best for your kid and for yourself, because if you can't take care of yourself, you're definitely not going to be able to take care of that kid, and that's not fair.
And I know that my daughter would be well taken care of with them.
Don't have an abortion. Give this child a chance.
All I could think about was needing to save my son.
My name is Kelly Rourke Scarry. I am the Executive Director, President, and Co-Founder of Building Arizona Families Adoption Agency, the Donna K. Evans Foundation, and creator of the You Before Me campaign. I have a bachelor's degree in Family Studies and Human Development and a master's degree in Education with an emphasis in school counseling. I was adopted at the age of 3 days, born to a teen birth mother, raised in a closed adoption, and reunited with my birth mother in 2007. I have worked in the adoption field for over 15 years.
And I'm Ron Raines. I've worked in radio since 1999. I was the co-host of two successful morning shows in Prescott, Arizona. Now I work for my wife, who's an adoption attorney, and I'm able to combine these two great passions and share them on this podcast.
Today on Birth Mother Matters and Adoption, part one of our two-part series on raising and parenting a child adopted at birth.
And we're clarifying this because there's so many different types of adoptions, even within our agency, of older children or maybe a grandparent adopting their grandchild or a step-parent adoption. But today we're just going to be focusing on raising or parenting a child that was adopted at birth. So I really want to address this topic from different perspectives to open up the gamut of approaches. One thing that is important, if you take away anything from this podcast, is this. Parenting an adopted child has the same two factors as any other type of parenting a child. You have a parent and a child. And we're going to learn throughout this podcast that really, when you're parenting a child that was adopted at birth, the major difference in parenting that child versus parenting a child that is biologically yours is really going to be what you add in, not what you take away. And that's really important to remember. So before we go into some suggestions and some ideas, one thing that is important is to really break down some variables that may affect a parent. And this could be biologically or adopted. And then to go into the parenting styles and find, you know, out which parenting style you, one, would like to be, and the one that you ideally, in reality, I should say, identify with. In other words, you may want to be this, use this type of parenting style, but in reality, maybe you're over on this planet.
Right. That makes sense.
Because we all have in our heads what type of parent we want to be. So a lot of this will be applicable to parents who have not even adopted a child, but are just parenting. Right. And it's interesting for me because, you know, I am parenting my biological children and my stepchildren. And I hate the word step, but my stepchildren. And I was an adopted child. So it's just, you know, there's a lot of dynamics. So some variables that may impact or affect the way a parent, and then in parentheses, parents, a child, would be the gender of the child. You know, growing up, I was raised, you know, in a two-parent family, and I was never taught how to mow a lawn. My dad did not think that a girl should mow a lawn.
Interesting.
And so I was never taught how to mow a lawn. And a lot of people say that that's interesting. And
I think it's accurate. Even, and you know, from a man's point of view, I thought, who hasn't been taught to mow a lawn? And then I thought back to actually my childhood. I was like, my sisters never mowed the lawn. It was always me and my brother, always, or my mom, which is odd because, you know, she's a feminine woman. But yeah, she knew how to mow a lawn and she taught us to mow a lawn. But the sisters probably to this day don't know how to mow a lawn. Okay.
So this is what's interesting is, you know, I have four girls. Not one of them have ever mowed a lawn. And it's not something that I consciously said, oh, now, you know, they're not mowing a lawn. No way. You know, the boys do it.
Right.
Gender affects, you know, whether we consciously or subconsciously how we are, you know, raising our child. Now, another point would be in the toys that we choose for our children.
Mm-hmm.
So biologically, I had 3 girls and a boy. And I remember being stumped walking through, you know, when he was 3 and 4, looking at all the toys and thinking, wow, these are really different than the girl toys, you right. know, and then I'm longingly looking back at the girls, the familiar aisles, you know, with the babies.
I want to shop here, not over here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I love my son to death, but cars and trucks, like that's very different. And, right. you know, when I had my ultrasound and we found out that it was a boy, I was stumped because I was sure I was having another girl. And I was excited to have a boy, but then I thought, oh no, I can't put a bow on his head. Because, you know, I'm the mom that has the big bows on their head. And the other pet said, it's okay, honey, just put a truck on his head. And I thought, no, that's not cute. And then she's like, or a baseball cap. And I'm thinking, it's not a bow. You know, and so...
Right. So you had to adjust to that. And there's so many aspects of gender that, I mean, I think of my son, like when he would fall down and scrape his knee, I would be like, get up, rub some dirt on it, you're going to be fine. But if I had a girl, I know that I would have been like, oh my God, she's so fragile, she's going to get broken. I got to pick her up and hold her and nurture that, you know? So just the attitude from your mindset right. is different.
Right. And the way, exactly, the way that if you watch how especially a father speaks to a boy versus how he speaks to a girl, it's very different.
Yeah.
And so that is definitely, you know, a factor that may impact and affect the way. And sometimes I think, again, we don't even realize that we're doing that, like mm-hmm. with mowing the lawn. The relationships that you had, that a parent has with their own parents, you know, you often hear like, oh, I'm not going to be like my mom when I'm a mom. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. But yet you'll find aspects where you do. You know, things will come out of your mouth and you're like,
and you step back and you go, I am my dad or I am my mom. I'm exactly like them. Right.
Or you'll purposely as a parent do the opposite just to be, you know what I mean? Oh, well they did this. So now I'm going to go take it to the other extreme.
I know my parents screwed up when they did things. So I'm doing it completely different. Right.
Right, right, right. Parents' own temperament, you know, their level of education, the culture, the socioeconomic status, and the influence of their spouse are huge, huge factors. And I lumped these all together because when you look at them, you think, oh, wow, well, now we're stereotyping. Mm-hmm. We're not stereotyping at all. Mm-hmm. We're actually, this is, so if you have a really lackadaisical personality, you're just chill, you know, nothing gets you excited. Okay, so if you're just, you know, a chill kind of person and you're laid back, the chances of you being an authoritarian parent are probably pretty slim. And we're going to learn about that in a little bit because, you know, you're not going to take the energy effort to really, you know, hone in on, you know, discipline and structure and respect. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to weigh into parenting. Your level of education. You know, I have a bachelor's degree in family studies and human development. And so there's all these theories of how to raise a child and, you know, what impacts what. And honestly, a lot of them as you're parenting fly right out the window because in the moment you're not thinking, oh, that cognitive theory, well, that needs to come into play right now. You know,
right.
as your son has just drawn all over the wall, I have a picture of this, or is sitting in the drawer of the silverware as he's smiling at you. Because he's climbed all the way up, you know, so
like, look at this, look what I did, mom.
Yeah. You're not thinking of that moment of, oh, well, the cognitive theory says that I should respond in this manner. You're right. thinking, oh my gosh, you know, grab him out of right. the drawer before the drawer collapses. Before he gets a fork in his
leg. Right.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Culture and socioeconomic status. So this is funny. And all 7 of our kids will laugh at this. And my adoptive mom will laugh at this if she hears this podcast. You know, I was raised in a, you know, a upper middle class mm-hmm. home. And my adoptive mother is very, very insistent on table manners. Very, very insistent. And
Emily Post, right.
Absolutely. She wants everybody at the table to share her philosophy. And it's a good one. There's nothing wrong with it. But everybody needs to have, you know, myself included to this day, needs to have that standard of table manners. And so she wants everybody to use table manners in preparation for eating possibly at the White House. Now, none of us are going to eat at the White House.
You never know.
Well. And so, you know, all of the kids will say, okay, it's, you know, eating at the White House, like we got to get ready. Like, you know, we're going to eat as if we're eating there. So if we go there, you know, we won't embarrass her and we'll show them that we know how to use our silverware and not put our elbows on the table and not lean over our food or smack our lips, you know, as we're eating or talk with our mouth full. You know, there's the whole list of what you don't do. Now, an example of that would be my biological mother, who's from West Virginia, and really wasn't focused on table manners.
Right.
You know, that wasn't something that she would have vested time or effort or energy into.
It wasn't that high priority. It was, you know.
I don't even believe it was on the list.
Fair enough.
Also, you know, the influence of your spouse. If you have a spouse that is very diligent and, you know, has his own or her own parenting values and wants them instilled, that will also affect the way that you parent because you want to be a cohesive unit.
You want to be a cohesive unit, but you also, in a lot of ways, want to complement each other in the areas. Like, I don't want to stereotype people, but many times the father is the authoritarian, whereas the mother is the nurturer, you know, or it's a lot of times I'm sure it's the opposite. But
well, no, I think the way you said it was right. I mean, that's how as a society we grew. I mean, you know, the father was the hunter and the gatherer and he brought in the food and the mother was at home taking care of the children and raising them. And so we are still evolving from that. So I think in a lot of ways that's still very relevant today.
Right. The father is kind of teaching the values of, okay, this is how you survive
and provide
for your family when you get old enough. And the mother's like, and this is how I take care of your wounds when you fall and skin your knee.
I was going to say the same thing. And this is the mom putting the Band-Aid on and brushing her hair. And yes. Also, I think personal experiences very much shape how you parent as well. When I was in high school, I was riding a bike down a very busy street, and it was a PE class. Like it was a bike riding PE class, which sounds so weird. And I crossed a lane, and I closest near death experience ever, and scared everybody behind me. It scared me. I mean, I could feel the heat from her car; like it was really bad.
Wow!
And thank goodness she missed. But to this day, I don't know that my oldest daughter can ride a bike. If so, barely. Mm-hmm. My two girls can ride a bike and my son can, but it's not something that I ever emphasized.
Right.
You know what I mean? I always kind of held my breath and just, I'm not really fond of it. I would never get on a bike again. And so because of my experience, it unfortunately has shaped theirs.
Right.
And as much as I've tried to just not, you know, grimace or look away, you know, when I know they're going to ride a bike. And of course, you know, they've got their helmet on and their pads and everything else. And I'm sitting there thinking, it still has shaped it. So
I'm curious about your actual experience because I know how we grew up again, also in the 70s, 80s era. Were you wearing helmet and pads at the time?
No.
Yeah, because we just didn't back then. It wasn't a thing. And now you see all these kids, and again, my initial reaction when I see kids riding around on bikes with helmets, it's always that second glance of, oh, okay, that's right. That's a thing now.
Okay, now when I see them, I think, oh, that's a good parent.
Right.
That's a good parent. You know, and when I see the kids that are not, I try very hard not to be judgmental because I want to be like, oh, where's your helmet? You know, I want to lean my head out the window and be like, you know, here's a helmet. Go home and put your
helmet on. You're helicopter parenting other kids. Good job.
Right. So, yes, having worked in a school for so long and raising so many of my own kids, it's very hard for me not to let that bleed out and parent everybody else's. So, conscious effort not to. You know, your employment. So, again, I worked in a school, and my daughter, my oldest daughter, was in kindergarten when I started at one of the school districts. And I remember thinking and telling her, like, you have to really behave here, because I'm going to be embarrassed if you go and you're naughty in school, because it's going to make me look bad. And, you know, she was five and she's okay, mom. You know, she was so cute. and then I heard a story, and I love this. When I had stopped, obviously, and moved on to the adoption agency. And years later, there was a vice principal at the school that one of our children went to. And her daughter was, I think, on her phone or doing something during class. She was like in the sixth or seventh grade that she wasn't supposed to be doing. And at that moment, the vice principal became mom again and marched into the classroom and picked it all up in front of all the other students and took it and walked right back out of the room. And I thought, good for you. And so it was one of those moments where I thought, I hope she wasn't embarrassed, because we're all parents that have kids here and we get it.
Oh, you mean you hope the mother wasn't embarrassed?
Yes.
Who cares if the kid was embarrassed? Because
I didn't care about that. I'm referring to the mother.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure we're on the same page.
Prime, the time. No, not at all. I had another parent who I will never forget. And it was at the first school that I worked at. And she had a seventh grade girl that thought it was cool to skip class. And so obviously her grades were starting to plummet. She would just ditch all the time. And I spoke with a parent as a school counselor. And I said, you know, this is really a problem. And the woman was probably eight and a half months pregnant with another child. And she said, I got this. And I thought, okay. And she said, I'm going to be a visitor for a while. And I thought, okay. And so what she did was she, for the next, it was about a week, maybe 10 days, went with her daughter to every class. So her daughter was, you know, this cool kid with her very pregnant mother standing behind her, following her from class to class, because they changed classes in seventh grade. So she would sit in the desk right behind her daughter. And anytime her daughter did something that she shouldn't, she'd lean over and flick her in the ear or tap her shoulder. And
I'm still here. Right.
Yeah. And her daughter never missed another class because she did not want her very pregnant mother. And then after she had the baby, she surely didn't want the baby and her mother sitting behind her.
Right.
So her cool status went way down real quick because, you know, it was, I thought it was amazing.
I
can tell you all the other kids are thinking, I don't want that. I don't.
Yeah.
No, thank you. I did become that mother a few times when my oldest daughter had to wear glasses and she didn't want to wear them. And it was before we got her contacts. And I remember thinking, okay. So when there were school functions and my younger ones had like Halloween parades or something like that, I would, you know, walk over to where her grade level would be. And there was this one time where, you know, she's supposed to have her glasses on and she's sitting there hanging out with the very boy that I told her she did not need to be hanging out with. So I walked over and put my arm around her and guided her away and asked her where her glasses were and why she's standing next to him. And she, and I remember her thinking, oh, like just groaning, like, you know, and she's like, you're here. And I said, I'm always here. That's what I, you know what I mean? I'm always here.
You can't get away with nothing. Right. I love it. So,
you know, when they say, you know, that socioeconomic status, I want to go back to that, that plays a factor. It can, because, you know, you talk about, oh, well, I'm going to put my child in a private school or I'm going to put, it's not that you can parent better. It's just, you may have different choices,
right,
that are available to you if you have a different status, you know, a different socioeconomic status. It's not,
and you may have different priorities as well.
Well, I mean, maybe you have to work more. Maybe in order to make that level of income, maybe you have to work more and you have to employ a nanny, which will then take away some of the influence of your own parenting. So it does, there's trade-ins and trade-outs. You know, mistakes that we made as parents when we were younger. I know I try to steer my kids away from making those same mistakes. So I hope my adoptive mother is not listening at the moment, but you know, I did admittedly sneak out the window because I was on the first floor, you know, at night. Yeah, I know. Shocking.
I think when I'm having a heart attack over here.
So
good. Sneaking out.
I did. Yeah. I will say that all of our doors and windows have alarms on them. So right. I will know if they're ever opened.
Because you know the tricks, right?
Because that's a mistake mine aren't going to make.
Good for you. Excellent.
Yes. So is there any that you can think of mistakes that you made that you were able to curtail for your
son? As far as when I was a kid as opposed to when I became a parent and I'm like, okay, I know I need to watch for this. Nothing specifically, but absolutely the idea of... I know how I thought as a kid or as a teenager and what I thought I could get away with. And yeah, you close those curtains. You say, okay, you're not going to get away the way I did. And right. So I can't think, like I said, nothing specific, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And you do. And you're hoping that as they get older, they do the same. You want the next generation to improve each time and get better at parenting or get better at being a kid and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny. So social media can absolutely influence the way you parent. So I, unfortunately, we're all living in this social media time. And it is not easy, and I think very much complicates parenting because the influences that come in and, you know, your kid wants to be cool and be on social media. And yet at the same time, you have to weigh the risks and the consequences of what can happen. And so being diligent and checking social media and being on it and trying to monitor it. And yet, I mean, the apps that come, I mean, you know, Instagram and Snapchat and then now TikTok. And I'm still trying to figure out how Snapchat works. And now there's TikTok, and now TikTok is this new thing. And, you know,
I'm stuck on MySpace. So. Grandpa Ron over here with his MySpace.
Yeah. TikTok is in your future. So, and I remember when I first heard it, I thought, oh, that's the name of a song. And I thought I'm more with it than they think.
Mom's cool.
Yeah, not knowing social media app.
Yeah, so, and these things pop up and you never know, obviously, which one is going to be the next popular one, who's going to be the next Facebook, you know, or the next Twitter. And now I can't even name them all. Bigo and TikTok, and there's a bunch of them. And I'm like, I'm not getting into all that. Thankfully, my son's grown.
Uncle Ron, we have four teenagers. So anytime you want an education in any of the social media, I will be happy to send one up there. I'll even put a bow on their head.
Boy, oh, would you?
You can choose. You've got two of each.
Send a boy with a bow. Thank you.
You got it. You know, outside perceptions too. I mean, when you walk into the grocery store, you know, you don't want to be that mom that is screaming at your child and, you know, as they're grabbing for the candy and asking every, you know, three steps, can I have that? Can I have that? Can I have that? Can I have that? Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to, you do want, I think most of us want people to look at it and be like, oh, okay, you know, like normal. They're not, you know, like a single file duck line, you know, they're not... I mean, that would be nice, but it's not realistic.
But it's not,
you know,
I've got
one kid hanging off of a grocery cart, you know, the other kid's running in circles, the other one's bringing me all this stuff they think that we need.
Right.
You know,
Mom, we need this 30-pound bag of rice. Why?
Right. Yeah.
Because it's fun to carry. That's why.
And so it's, you know, you know, and you just don't. I mean, you walk in the aisle and you're like, okay, you know, if you're really good throughout the grocery store, you can pick one thing. And of course they pick the family size jumbo bag of Takis. You know what I mean? So you're thinking, okay, that's, I was thinking like a Kit Kat, like right. Not the, you know, 50 pound bag of.
Yeah. Not the Costco size Takis.
Right. So
now, who's worse about that though? I'm just curious because I know Adam, your husband, very well. And I know he loves those Takis. Who's worse about the Takis, the kids or Adam?
He will buy them.
Mm-hmm.
And then give them to the kids and then wind up sharing them with them. So okay. He won't buy himself a bag. And he's the most generous person in the world.
Oh, absolutely.
So he will, you know, he will buy all of them, each a bag, and then partake.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. But he's good. And I will tell you that they get a lot more when they go with him. He is, like I said, he will buy them. They love to go to the store with him because right. He's way
he's
more
gonna
generous.
He's going to spoil
them. Yes. Whereas I am more of the no mom. No.
I'll tell you what, no. Kids, you get one Twix and you got to split it. Right. Each you get the left, you get the right. That's all.
And remember the rule too. The person who breaks it doesn't get first choice.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. When you have this many kids, we have all it all broken down. We got this. We got this in spades. So.
And this is where we'll pick it up next time for part two of our two-part series on raising and parenting a child adopted at birth. Thank you for joining us on Birth Mother Matters in Adoption. If you're listening and you're dealing with an unplanned pregnancy and want more information about adoption, Building Arizona Families is a local Arizona adoption agency and available 24/7 by phone or text at 623-695-4112. That's 623-695-4112. We can make an immediate appointment with you to get started on creating an Arizona adoption plan or just get you more information. You can also find out more information about Building Arizona Families on their website at azpregnancyhelp.com. Thanks also go out to Grapes for allowing us to use their song, I Don't Know, as our theme song. Birth Mother Matters in Adoption was written and produced by Kelly Rourke Scarry and edited by me. Please rate and review this podcast wherever you're listening to us. We'd really appreciate it. We also now have a website at birthmothermatterspodcast.com. Tune in next time on Birth Mother Matters in Adoption. For Kelly Rourke Scarry, I'm Ron Raines.